Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for tuning in on this Thursday afternoon. We'll jump right in. On a phone line is Ryan Benici. He is the CMO of G2 Crowd and joins us now on the Business Lunch. Ryan, welcome in.
Hey, Steve. It's great to be with you. How are you doing?
I'm fine. So, okay, you're a little new in your job, right? You just kind of took over there a few months ago. How's it going?
I did, yeah. I joined back in December from Australia originally. And the first 3 months at G2 Crowd have been just amazing, really. It's been a pretty amazingly fast-paced roller coaster, but I'm loving it.
So G2 Crowd, it's a platform, right, for reviews for business software. So if I want to buy a piece of software, I'm interested in it, I would go to G2 Crowd, could sort of find what other customers think of it. Did I get that right?
That's absolutely correct, Steve. Yeah, we're the world's leading B2B review site. So I think we've got around 400,000 business software reviews on the site now, and growing pretty quickly. It was only, I think, a month or two ago that we had 300,000. So lots of people in business are coming to the site to leave reviews on the software that they love and the software that they...
Oh, you know what? Ryan, we're having a hard time with you. I'm going to put you on hold and see if Ryan can reconnect because the phone line doesn't sound too good there. But Ryan Benici is the chief marketing officer at G2 Crowd. And as Ryan was saying, I don't know if you could hear, but it's a company where you can go and go online, look at different software reviews and check them out, see if it's a good fit for you. I want to talk to Ryan mostly about the state of the B2B business in Chicago these days and the tech temperature of the city, because, you know, we tend to think of New York, we tend to think of the Silicon Valley, and maybe not so much Chicago, but Chicago is making more of a name of itself. It's being recognized by more and more places. In fact, there was a KPMG study, a disruptive tech study of last year, put Chicago at number 6 as one of the best innovation hubs in the world, number 3 in the U.S. So we've got that going for it, number 3 behind only New York City and Washington, D.C. That's interesting to me. Watch Washington, D.C., because that's where Amazon is talking about relocating. You know, 3 of their final sites are in the D.C. area, and that certainly shows some possibilities for them. So we're hoping to reconnect with Ryan Benici here from the CMO of G2 Crowd, and we'll talk to him in just a sec. How are we doing, Bennett? We're going to get there? Bennett's trying to reconnect with him now, and we're going to give it a shot. All right, Ryan, let's try again. Can you hear me?
Looks like we're back. Hey, yeah.
All right, well, listen, I didn't know you were going to be calling from Australia.
I'm calling from Chicago, but clearly my Australian phone isn't playing
right.
Ball.
Well, you know, I was just talking while we were connecting just about how Chicago is doing, because I think sometimes the city gets overlooked when it comes to its sort of tech rep, or maybe we've just got a chip on our shoulder here in Chicago and we don't realize how widely recognized we are around the world. So how do we fit in?
Yeah, look, I mean, gosh, I think outside of the U.S., I'd say Silicon Valley still really takes the kind of the place of where everyone is thinking about. I think internally in America, the Chicago ecosystem and awareness of how fast it's growing is certainly on the rise.
And so does a lot of
companies growing.
Well, you know, and Chicago's kind of on an island, if you will, in the middle of the country. Does that help it or hurt it?
Look, I think from an entrepreneur perspective and from the ability to work on really fascinating problems and challenges, it helps it. I think, though, as those like entrepreneurs start to scale up their businesses, though, it can be, I don't know, less helpful because there's just so much of a focus on, you know, the different coasts.
Right. You guys,
You know, the amount of VCs that are growing in Chicago is getting more and more exciting, I think, right? Like there's the Pritzker Group, Hyde Park Ventures, Chicago Ventures. Lots of exciting stuff in that space, and we're very active with them.
Does that money from those Chicago ventures stay in Chicago, or do they invest elsewhere as well?
I think they're investing pretty broadly, but you know, some of them, like Hyde Park Ventures, for example, I think I want to say the majority of their investments are in the Midwest. So, yeah, it's definitely a lot of focus and a lot of really exciting companies here, right? So if you look at Uptake, they had $207 million in funding last year. They're an analytics and predictive software solution. Yellow is a talent acquisition solution, raised $31 million last year. And even ourselves, G2 Crowd, right? We raised $30 million last year. LinkedIn, which is obviously West Coast, and then Excel as well. So Yeah, I think there's like a lot of interest in the Chicago scene.
We're going to talk to Betsy Ziegler tomorrow on the show, just named as the new chief of 1871. How important are the incubators like 1871 in the city when it comes to tech?
I think the incubators are really at the heart of what it is to help tech grow and start to boom, because without them, I think it's really hard for people in areas where there's less tech companies to start to connect the dots and learn from one another, because, you know, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And so I think, you know, the 1871s of the world are definitely helping the Chicago scene.
Ryan Benici is the CMO of G2 Crowd. Ryan, great to talk to you today. I appreciate it. Wish you continued success.
Great to chat with you too, Stephen. If anyone wants to check out the list of the top tech companies in Chicago, the best site to go to is g2crowd.com/best.
It's 12:21. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Bill Geiger's in the studio. Our regular conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Good to be here, sir.
You're looking good. You're looking spring-like. You're ready for the...
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Well, you know, tell me about the importance of couples when they're in their 50s and 60s and they're getting close to the retirement age. You know, right. We talk about this. What sorts of things should they be doing?
Well, they really need to transition what their portfolio looks like, Steve. What served you well in your 30s, which was growth, that's not quite what you need going into retirement. There's two big reasons to reposition. First of all, retirement is like 20 to 25 years of unemployment.
Right.
And if you think about that, no more job, no more paycheck, nothing else ever again coming into your bank account, you're going to need dependable, sustainable income to last you for all that time. And you better start working on that.
You know, it's funny because I know a lot of people say when you're investing, don't look at it every day.
That's right.
It's going up a little bit.
Yeah, you looked.
Don't look every day, you know, because it's a long-term thing. There's not much sense in sweating day-to-day stuff. But if you don't look over a period of time, you tend to lose track of where you are.
Steve, there's not much good sweating it on a day-to-day basis when you're in your 30s and your 40s. But if you're getting close to retirement, your late 50s, early 60s, you cannot have a big loss at this time of your life. You can't, because if you do, you're not going to retire when you want to.
Right.
You're going to have to work. I sat down with an HR manager from a major firm here in town. He told me about an employee that retired in 2008, just before the big downturn. He had to be hired back, and he is still working 10 years later.
Because he had too much risk in the wrong spot.
He had too much risk. And when you're getting close to retirement, you can't ignore the risk in your portfolio. So the two big things you need to do is reposition part of your portfolio to create dependable, sustainable income that you're going to need. And the other thing is to pull in your risk. You still want growth, but you just don't want the risk of a 30-year-old.
And I'm reaching the age now where I was up in with some classmates a couple weeks ago, and old classmates, old.
Yeah.
You know, but some of my friends are starting to retire.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm like, I want to retire too, but I realize that this is the risky time. I mean, right, because I'm getting ready to do it. This is the time I could really screw it up.
How many years out do you think you are from retirement?
I'm about -2. I wanted to retire
-2 years ago.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that before. listen, if you're getting close enough to retirement that you're having those thoughts, you should be thinking about repositioning your portfolio.
Yeah. So I come in. What happens when someone comes in and says something?
Well, the first thing we do is we want to understand who you are and exactly where you're at in this process. And we do a number of different tests. We do analysis, and we want to understand just how much risk you have, whether you have any source of dependable income, what your portfolio is costing you, and so on. So we do a bunch of different tests to understand that. The next thing is we make some very specific recommendations to get you into the right spot,
right,
which you kind of sort of should be doing now.
You know, people talk about where your risk level is, right?
Yes.
And so I think of this in a different way, because you don't care. It doesn't matter as much about how much I like roller coasters,
right,
what my risk level is there, as it is really just my station in life.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, so what if I like hot food? That doesn't really matter about how I should be investing.
You could feel like you're 29 years old and you're still a risk taker, but you have to think if you lose half your assets close to retirement, that's it. Steve, I know you're going to do this in a moment. Let's do something special for our audience. The next five callers who call in with at least $500,000 in their portfolio, we're going to help them with this. We're going to do a full-blown retirement plan for free on a complimentary basis.
And so what is involved in that?
We're going to understand how much risk is in your portfolio. We're going to understand how much your portfolio is costing you, what growth and income potential you have, and then we're going to compare where you're at to what you kind of sort of should be doing at this stage of your life.
All right, Bill Geiger, enjoy the week. It's nice to see you again.
Nice to see you, sir.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, here we are on Thursday, February 22nd. 2 weeks from today is International Women's Day, and I'm off next week, actually, but I would imagine that's the sort of thing that we will be talking about quite a lot in the next 2 weeks. So what the heck, let's start right now. Katrina Balog is in the studio. She's the Executive Director of the Edgewater Chamber of Commerce. Katrina, welcome back. Have you been on the show before? I know we've talked
about it. Once, maybe a year or two ago.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks. It's nice to have you back.
Thank you.
And also in the studio is Melissa Wanga Kalamasai, who is the owner of Flower.
Mm-hmm.
And she misspells it.
P-H-L-O-U-R.
What's behind that name?
So we specialize in artisan bread, and bread making is very scientific if you get into it. So we kind of took from the pH scale for our flour.
I like it.
Flour is amazing.
And you've been in business you're coming up on a year?
Almost a year in April.
In April, how's it been?
Awesome. The community's great.
Did you grow up in a restaurant household?
Mm-hmm. Yep. My dad has been in the restaurant business in Chicago for 25, 30 years.
Right. And so, was it a natural that you would be doing this yourself?
Oh, yeah. That's all I ever know.
Right. Really?
Yeah.
And, okay, so Katrina, when it comes to women in business and this event in a couple of weeks, it's a pub crawl, but for restaurants, right?
Yes. So it's a dinner crawl. So you're going to experience food from all over the world, all from women-owned or co-owned restaurants in Edgewater.
How does Edgewater do when it comes to the city as a whole with female business owners?
Yeah, so it's hard to know the exact percentage of women-owned businesses, but I can tell you in Edgewater, we have over 30 businesses participating in this event that are women-owned. And so we have quite a few in the neighborhood, and many of them are also immigrants.
Well, I was going to say, I'm thinking of restaurants in Edgewater. I'm thinking of ethnic food.
Yes.
Is that right?
So we're going to be serving, on this crawl, we're serving Ethiopian food, Mexican food, German, Indian, Thai food. So you're going to taste the world.
Now, when you choose the stops, are you sort of comparing them or coupling them together? Or are we going from Thai to German? I don't know if I could handle that.
Yeah, the nice thing is it's all small bites, so it's not like you have to have a full meal of anything. We pick the slots based on what's a walkable route for someone on the crawl, and then we also have some women-owned businesses, like, for example, an acupuncture studio that's along the route. She's going to host another business to sample out of there.
All right, so it's International Women's Day, and I told you off the air that, you know, sometimes I think issues in general get transformed into gender issues. But mm-hmm. So tell me the significance of a Women's Day and mm-hmm. why we need that to foster business in Edgewater and elsewhere.
So for us, you know, Women's Day International Women's Day started in the early 1900s, and now it's recognized in several countries around the world. And there's no specific event. Each community can kind of think about how they might want to celebrate it. So for us in Edgewater, it's an opportunity to highlight all of these women who have made their home in Edgewater, many of them immigrant women, and opened up awesome restaurants in the neighborhood. And so for us, it's a way to celebrate, highlight, showcase all the good work they're
doing.
Now,
when I first met you, the Phoenix Bean was involved.
Mm-hmm. She's involved again this year. So Jenny Yang from Phoenix Bean Tofu is an awesome entrepreneur who has expanded her organic tofu business, sells Mariano's, Whole Foods, all sorts of restaurants.
Yeah.
And so you'll get to sample her food too.
Yeah, that's and I have, and it's great. Yeah, she turned me on to tofu. Okay, so when it comes to, I run a business, Melissa runs a business. The difference is I didn't start my business when I was about 4 or 5 months pregnant. So that's clearly a difference when it comes to gender issues. Right? You have an 8-month-old at home.
He's 8 months. He's with grandma right now. So yeah, we opened in April. He was born in June, so I was full on pregnant when we started. And then 2 days after I had him, I was back at the bakery.
You were back at work 2 days later. Mm-hmm. What were you thinking?
I had to be there.
You
the bakery is my second baby, so.
Yeah. So tell me about the idea of getting a business up and running. I know, I'm sure Katrina's organization helps a lot. You've had experience. Your dad had experience in it, but it still has to be daunting when you're the principal behind it.
Yeah. I mean, I try to hold myself as a strong woman, and I present myself in that way. So I go into a room of men and they usually give me respect, but there's definitely been times where someone has thought I was the saleswoman and not the owner.
Is that right? Really?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's 'cause you must be the little girl who's coming to.
Yeah. Tagging along with dad.
How do you set them straight?
I usually let them think it, and then I open my mouth, and then they realize I actually know what I'm talking about. So.
What has been your biggest sort of hurdle getting up and running in this first year? Because they always say the first year, I know with restaurants anyway, I don't know if it's the same with a food shop, but is the critical thing, and you know, you could fail at any time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're just letting our customers know that we want to provide them with the highest quality, and they see that. So we are baking bread that very few people are baking nowadays. So we put a lot of time
Is it a walk-by shop, or who are your clients?
Yeah, we have a lot of neighborhood people. We sell our breads at farmers markets, so we get our name out there that way too.
Right. Okay, Melissa, so why is it that I can't make a good loaf of bread with my bread machine?
Because instant yeast is being used in America. So you need to use a natural fermentation process to really give yourself a delicious bread.
Are you a baker?
My dad and my brother are the main bread bakers.
You're the brains, they're the bakers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But because it's interesting to me about the pH flour, mm-hmm. because there really is science involved here.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. What's the so what if when you close your door at night and it's been a good day, what is it that makes it a good day for you? The fact that you're going home to an 8-month-old?
That, and yeah, I mean, I'm there with my family. So it's me and my brother and my dad have always been so close. So we just laugh the whole day. So
really?
It's awesome. Yeah.
No fights? No family fights?
I mean, sometimes, but
right.
We get over them.
All right.
Yeah.
Give me the particulars. Where do people find you? Not of the fights, of the address.
What do we fight about?
No. Where's the store so people can find the store?
1138 West Bryn Mawr. We're Bryn Mawr and Broadway in Edgewater.
Is there a website?
Yep, www.phlour.com.
And Katrina, if people are interested in this restaurant or this dinner crawl, where do they find more information?
At edgewater.org. And last year we sold out, so hopefully if you're interested, you'll buy your tickets soon. And so it's www.edgewater.org.
Katrina, Melissa, nice to talk to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.
At the Wintrust Minute, sharing the news and asking questions for small business owners. For entrepreneurs, partnering up with companies can lead to major success. But how do you meet those game changers? Networking. 1871 recently partnered up with San Francisco-based Brella for a 4-part networking event series in order to help more of these connections happen around the city. But why not just bring in veterans of business to help run your company? Easier said than done. But that's exactly what Uptake did when they announced Ganesh Bell, a former executive at GE, will be their new president of data analytics. Whatever stage you might be in, remember to look around and utilize the resources in this great city of ours. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Elise Glink is on a phone line. Elise, of course, is the person behind ThinkGlink.com, the CEO of Best Money Moves, an HR app that helps workers get a hold of their financial stress and employers help them deal with that. Elise, I'm stressed out myself. How are you?
I'm feeling pretty good, actually, Steve. Thanks.
Actually, I'm not stressed out because I'm sitting on a mortgage in the twos, and I'm looking now at the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage jumped up this past week to 4. So the rates are going up. The sales are going down. We saw that earlier this week as well. Tell me about the housing industry.
Yeah, you know, this has been the big concern for the last 10 years. What happens when mortgage interest rates rise up from this absolutely historic low level that it was at? And we're seeing that mortgage interest rates have now jumped up 2 or 3 weeks in a row. They're actually averaging a little bit over 4%. It's about 4.25% for a 30-year fixed. Not horrible. Not horrible at all. But
actually good, right? I mean, if you look at it historically, it's still very nice.
It is. But the problem is that it's been 3.5% for a really long time. And there's a whole generation of home buyers who are just kind of shocked by it. And also, when you compare, when you add rising home prices to rising mortgage rates, unaffordable homes are the result.
So what gives then? I would imagine what would give first would be the home prices.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see. Normally, you would see home prices soften in the wake of minimal demand. But the fact that there are very few homes in the market, and so home buyers are out in force right now. They still want to buy, and what's happening across the country are bidding wars. So it doesn't seem like we've hit a breaking point yet with the interest rates rising, but it will cost you more over the life of the loan.
And so, you know, at 4% or a little over 4%, you're right. If people have been looking at 3.5 or lower for years and years, you know, their life experience might look at this as a very high rate or a high rate. The older you are, I would imagine the more you realize this still is, it's not the bargain it used to be, but it's certainly a bargain compared to when a lot of people were facing when they bought their first home.
It is. I mean, just to put it in perspective, and I've said this quite often, when I bought my first house, we were buying a co-op, and it was 11.75% for a co-op.
Right.
Very few lenders were doing co-op loans. And then a couple of years later, we refinanced to 8 1/8. And when you think that that's twice where we are today, it seems really shocking, but we were happy to have it.
Well, so then is there evidence that people are staying out of the housing market because of the interest rate?
Well, we are seeing that. So what we're first seeing are refinancings. So the number of people who could refinance a loan and actually save significant amounts of money is going down because the interest rates are going up, right? So we're seeing that applications to refinance a home loan, which is the most rate sensitive, fell 7% for the week. And so that's, but they're a little bit higher than a year ago because interest rates were lower then. And the refinance share is now at its lowest level since July. It's 44.5% of total applications. So borrowers might be looking, instead of to refinance and do a cash out refinance, you might see borrowers do a home equity line of credit. The problem there is
let me finish that sentence. They lost their tax cut, right? They lost their tax break on that.
Right. So if you're using home equity loans for paying medical bills or covering college tuition or going on vacation, that's great. But it's no longer tax deductible for those reasons. However, if you're substantially improving your home, like you're repainting it or re-roofing it or, I don't know, putting in a new driveway, then you still would be able to deduct the interest.
Mm. Well, okay, that seems kind of fair. I mean, if you get the deduction to buy a house, then you should get the deduction to maintain or work on the house, but maybe not to pay for a trip to Europe.
How is everybody going to prove this? I'm a little unclear on the details, Steve.
Right.
But yes, technically you should use it, you know, for a substantial improvement in your home. That would be great. But where do you draw the line? What if you just redecorate?
What if I was going to Europe to look at the great houses of Paris to get ideas to come home and rehab my house? Then could I still write it off?
It's probably a business expense at that point, but that's a separate conversation.
Okay, so I want to go back to, though, you talked about the refinancing, and that's the, you know, sort of the one most susceptible to the increase in the rates. But if you want to buy a house and you've reached the point where you want to buy the house, I'm wondering if those people are being kept home just because it's up 0.5% over it was several months ago. I mean, are we seeing evidence of that?
We are. So mortgage applications also fell 6% for the week. They're barely 3% higher than a year ago. And overall, we've got home affordability weakening. So again, it's that home prices are rising because there's just almost no homes for sale. And let me just say that this rising interest rate thing is only going to make that worse because people like you and me who have been in our homes a long time, kids are grown, we should be empty nesters thinking to move to a smaller place. we're not going to do it. It's too expensive to go. And my interest rate, like yours, is like 3%. I'm not going to give that up so that I could go buy a more expensive place and maybe pay 4 or 5% interest. That just seems like a bad financial move, not my best money move. And so, but when you look at the mortgage application rates, you really are starting to see that compress. So people are wanting to buy a house, but either they can't find it or they're not going to be able to afford it.
That's Elise Gling. Check out Best Bunny Moves. Nice to talk to you, Elise. We'll do it again next week.
You bet, Steve.